you say the Chancellor's bluffing, given how important a decision this is for voters. Do you want something a bit more concrete than that as a rebuttal?
Well, I think people in Scotland have seen through the Chancellor already. I mean, there's been an enormous counter-reaction. You know, it's a big boomerang for not just the Chancellor, but for the Labour Party as well. The whole No campaign is suffering very badly over the last few days. And that is an instinctive Scottish reaction. They're being talked down to, diktats from London. But what I was doing today was putting the reason behind it. You know, why is bluffing? And I've pointed out from the crippling transaction costs for businesses in England of trying to force Scotland into a different currency. And obviously, he's going to lumber himself with all of the UK national debt. Now, that would make everybody in Scotland £25,000 a head richer. But it's not something he's really going to do. So looking him at George Osborne in the eye, if we can think about that rather unpleasant prospect, you know, this guy's bluffing, and we know he's bluffing, and we should act on that basis. Now, of course, the Fiscal Commission, the Nobel laureate economists, they put forward a range of options for Scotland that we could do. But the best option is to share the pound. It's our pound. It's not George Osborne's pound, and we're entitled to do that. And therefore, that is the argument, both in terms of the instinctive reaction against Tory diktats from London, but also in terms of the reason case of what's in the best interests of Scotland and the rest of the United Kingdom.
The worst case scenario being that if they don't let us use the pound, we'll walk away. We're not taking a share of the debt. But for a new country, and to walk away from debts like that, will there not be long-term problems for Scotland in doing that?
Well, there'll be no problems at all. I mean, it's very important to understand the Treasury has now already admitted that it has legal liability for the debt. There's no question of a default. That was done in a statement in January. We're not arguing to do that, incidentally. This is their argument. It's the logical consequence of saying all the assets are ours. If you say all the assets, like the Bank of England, belongs to London, then the debts come with it. The Bank of England actually holds title to one-third of UK debt itself. So that's the implication. He's not being threatened by the SNP. It's the implications of his own position. The legal position is that we are not liable for the debt. Now, we say share and share alike. He says, I'm going to grab the assets, but I expect you to take the liabilities. He's not on. Of course, the reality is he's not going to allow himself to be in that position. That's why he's bluffing. So both in transaction costs for business, because I wouldn't like to be the Tory Chancellor who goes to businesses in England and says, listen, I've got a great idea, I'm going to tax you for the privilege of exporting to Scotland. I mean, that's ridiculous. But secondly, he's not going to allow himself to get stuck with the whole of the UK debt. But that is where he's going if he wasn't bluffing. Therefore, he's bluffing, and therefore we should see through him and act accordingly for a yes vote.
This referendum is going to be decided by the undecided voters. Mm. Even if these threats are baseless, do you not accept that people who are maybe unsure will go into that polling booth and hear his words ringing in their ears and, well, as a default, vote no?
Well, actually, thus far, even Alistair Darling's first election agent has said that George Osborne's words and Labour ganging up with him are enough to make him vote yes. if that is what Alistair Darling's first election agent is saying, then goodness knows what other folk are saying. So the reaction is very clear. People will not be dictated to, talked down to in the way that the Chancellor was last week. Now, the Fiscal Commission has set forward a range of policy options for Scotland. There's a range of things we could do, but the best one is to share the currency. And why should we be knocked off what's best for Scotland, best for the rest of the country, just because George Osborne is running an election bluff? Why can't we just see through him and tell him to go homewards and think again?
Some of your compatriots in the Yes camp, though, accept their first choice would be Scotland's own currency. Why not go for that over keeping the pound?
Well, we asked a fiscal commission composed of some of the greatest economists in the world. In fact, when Mark Carney, the Governor of the Bank of England, was up, the only economist he mentioned, apart from Adam Smith, was Jim Merlis, who's one of the lead authors of our report. So we asked the Fiscal Commission to say, look, what are the options for Scotland? They put forward six different options, many of which are viable. They make no argument about that. But they said, look, the best option, because you don't want to have transaction costs, is to share sterling. That's the best option. So that's the best thing. Now, it's quite true that it goes for Scotland, it goes for any country, that when a government's elected, they can choose what's best for the people. But right now, we're the elected government, therefore it's our responsibility to say, after discussion, what we think's best. In the future, of course, if another government's elected in an independent Scotland, they're perfectly able to do the same thing. Of course, the great advantage is, if we're independent, we'll have these choices. If we're not independent, then we get stuck with the likes of George Osborne.
How independent will we be, though, if the Bank of England are making a lot of decisions that affect Scotland?
Well, very substantially. I mean, it means you're still in control of your tax, your spend. And I say still in control, we're not in control of that just now. competition policy, oil and gas revenues, the oil and gas industry, the energy industries, for example, the minimum wage, social policy, the ability to get the revenues from our great transformation of childcare that we're planning. So you control your money, basically. Well, you don't control interest rates, but then we don't control these at the present moment. You don't control the international rate of the sterling, but then that's certainly not controlled by George Osborne. Insofar as it's controlled at all, it's controlled by the Independent Bank of England. So we're losing nothing that we control at the present moment. We're gaining many, many policy levers to make Scotland a more prosperous and just society, and we've detailed these in the Fiscal Commission. Indeed, when we're discussing them in the Scottish Parliament, the Labour leader was unwise enough to say there were wee things. There are actually no wee things. I mean, choosing, you know, whether what your tax rate should be, whether you have a more equal society, how high the minimum wage should be, whether you should be pulled into illegal wars or not, whether you should get rid of nuclear weapons from your soil. These are big things. These are the stuff of society. These are the things we'll control with independence.
The other major issue about the independence referendum campaign raised yesterday, the President of the European Union saying it would be impossible for Scotland to join.
Well, I thought he was very unwise. I mean, it's always interesting to hear what Mr Barroso's got to say, but, you know, this isn't a matter for the European Commission. It's the Council of Ministers who decide this. It certainly won't be a matter for Mr Barroso. He's off. He's retiring in the autumn. I thought he was very unwise to compare Scotland to Kosovo, and I'll tell you why. Kosovo was a country emerging from civil war who declared a unilateral declaration of independence, which is why people have been slow in some cases to recognise them. Scotland is a country of a developed democracy going through a democratic process under an Edinburgh Agreement, which is consented, and that is to say that both parties, London and ourselves, have agreed to respect the wishes of the Scottish people and to act upon them. It's a totally different situation, which is why I think David Edward, who was in the European Court of Justice for 14 years, Sir David Edward today described Barroso's comments as absurd. So, you know, a European Union which has taken in 28 countries, where Scotland's been part of it for 40 years, is not going to say no to Scotland. It would be against the whole principles of Europe, the whole democratic acceptance. And, of course, it has to be said that Scotland contributes a great deal to the rest of Europe, and the rest of Europe know that. Now, significantly, no country has said that they would attempt to veto Scotland.
Mr Barroso, obviously not a member of the big three parties, opposing the independence campaign. Are his view not a more an independent one? I mean, is there anyone in the EC that shares your view, for example?
Oh, plenty of people. I think the Director General, only Director General of the European Commission, of course, is Graeme Avery, who gave evidence at the Scottish Parliament only 2 weeks ago. Now, this is a man who's actually presided and been part of 14 accession negotiations of different countries, east, west, north and south, who've come into the European Union. And he said that it's perfectly credible. He backed the Scottish Government's position. He said that Europe would respect the democratic wishes of the Scottish people. And he said the timetable for doing it was a realistic timetable. Now, these are the things that Graeme Avery said. And he's got no axe to grind. He's an academic at Oxford now. But he was speaking from the experience of actually being somebody who's been in all of these accession negotiations. So there's plenty of experts who've backed the Scottish Government's point of view. You know, I just wonder in terms of the... It's difficult to imagine why Mr Barroso made the Kosovo comparison. You would have to think he wasn't aware of the Edinburgh Agreement and the difference in the cases. If that's the case, let me repeat, I'm very happy to have dialogue with the European Commission in the same way as we had dialogue with the Bank of England, technical discussions. Thus far, the European Commission has said they'll only go through London. But I'm perfectly prepared. In fact, I think it would be a good thing if we had that dialogue so as we can explain the nature of the process that's going on in Scotland and so as that perhaps comments in future will be a bit more informed. But at the end of the day, this is a matter for the countries of Europe and the Council of Ministers, and they will respect a democratic decision of the Scottish people.
The most recent country to make that accession to the EU, Croatia, there's no timetable being set, but it will have to join the euro. Why is it you're so confident Scotland wouldn't have to do the same?
Well, there's no compulsion to join the euro. You've got to be in the European monetary system for 2 years, and that is an option. And the best example, of course, is Sweden, who are under the same, and Sweden has decided not to join the euro because they're not joining the European monetary system. And therefore, Scotland would be in the same position as Sweden. It's a matter of choice. Many countries in Eastern Europe are deciding to join the euro because, you know, their background in terms of communist states, etc., didn't give them an attractive option. But Sweden, a developed country, has decided not to join the euro. And that's generally accepted as well. What I think is important here is that we're putting forward a case which says, look, Scotland becomes an independent country, we can do it. We've been in for 40 years. We don't have to change anything. We have all the parameters of being a European community member. But we're not arguing for a position of changing anybody else's rights. We're arguing for continuity of effect and no detriment. That means nobody else in Europe is going to be disadvantaged by Scotland becoming a member state. Under these circumstances, I think there's absolutely no doubt that Europe, the whole of Europe, will accept Scotland's democratic decision.
Lastly, we've certainly seen the referendum campaign hot up over the past week. I mean, are you concerned that the war of words will become increasingly bitter in the run-up to September?
Yeah, well, I hope it doesn't, because, you see, George Osborne, a couple of years back, the back end of 2011, came up to the North East and said that, you know, investment was about to collapse in Scotland because of this referendum. And since then, we've had record inward investment levels in Scotland. Our unemployment is 6.4% compared to the UK of 7.1%. Today, we see business confidence in Scotland at a record high. So all these doom-laden predictions of George Osborne, none of them came to pass. Significantly, after he did that, we had the Edinburgh Agreement, and people decided to have a consensual process. So I hope people like George Osborne and their attitude doesn't prevail, because it's far, far better to have these arguments with mutual respect and have a positive case put forward for yes voters I'll be putting forward, or for a no vote. You know, tell us what you're going to do if there's a no vote, for example. That would be a positive thing to say. So I'll continue to put forward the case for a yes vote. I'll hang on the Edinburgh Agreement, which I think is hugely important. And I think that at the end of the day, in politics, if a positive case faces a negative case, then the positive case wins, because people like to vote for something, not against something.